We'll start with Perek Vav now, which I call the chapter of intrigue. So there's a very interesting message that's going to emerge in this Perek, which I think requires that we think about it in context in Tanakh. The themes here essentially are two. Nehemiah is going to be ambushed, or they're going to try to ambush him, as in ambush him and kill him. And he's going to face false charges of disloyalty to the throne. That's what we're going to see. Both of those themes, the idea of being attacked and the idea of facing a charge of disloyalty, are themes that have echoes in this era in other stories. Ambush, any number of Jewish kings from the latter half of the First Temple were attacked in this way, especially Malchei Yisrael, the kings in the Northern Kingdom. Regularly we find this one governed for 6 months and then he was killed and he was replaced by so-and-so. Of course, if you want the Persian period, yeah, you have the attempt to assassinate Ahasuerus, right? Bigtan and Teresh. And then you have the story of Gedaliah, which I gave you a reference to on the sheet. We're not going to go through it. I just wanted you to have it there in number 9. But Gedaliah is assassinated. Gedaliah, remember, is the governor of the Jews under the Babylonians. After the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, most of the people have been exiled. Gedaliah is the one who the government leaves behind to lead the Jews, and the Jews themselves, allied with Ammon, assassinate him. Charges of disloyalty? Well, we get that all the time, right? We got that going back to the Jews themselves in the Book of Esther, right? Yeshnoam achad mefuzar umeforad, they don't listen to you, whatever, you should kill them. Ahasuerus says, okay. In Daniel, you have Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who are charged with disloyalty to the king. They won't bow to the statue when the music plays. And then Daniel himself, when he prays to God instead of going to Darius the Mede for assistance, also has this accusation. So we have all sorts of stories of Jews being charged with disloyalty to the throne, and of Jews and of leaders being attacked. The key difference, though, between other stories and this one is that, generally speaking, God saves the hero from the ambush or from the charges of disloyalty, right? Not always. Gedaliah doesn't get saved. But generally speaking, God will intervene if they deserve it, and those stories tend to reflect divine protection, right? Look at that. So-and-so attacked you, and I took care of you. Nehemiah will not get any divine intervention in this story. Instead, he's going to have to deal with it himself. He will pray to God, because that's what he does. But it's really going to be taken care of by his own calm and his own wit. And I think there's a message here that's consistent with what we've seen about Nehemiah all along. He's a very do-it-yourself guy. The work on the wall, broke it down, distributed it, let's do it. The plan for defense, here's what we're going to do. The economics, here's how we're going to deal with it. Every step of the way, Nehemiah is going to do this himself. That's what we're going to see in this parak as well. So, with that, yeah.
When you say that they were thinking of taking him out, but then he's got such good features as well, so why would they have taken him out?
Why would who have taken him out?
I thought you had said, like with Raph, they were very unhappy with that part where he dragged.
But they did not take it out, correct?
They didn't take it out. So why would they?
Well, if you really think that he's wrong for using Tanakh as a place to put in a commercial for himself, I mean, he didn't put this in Tanakh. In other words, he wrote a book. He wrote a memoir. And the assembly that's canonizing Tanakh says, okay, this goes in. He may have been on that assembly. That's actually its own discussion, right? Is he on the assembly? You have to recuse yourself from the review of your book, the decision of whether they canonize it or not. But in terms of what they could have done to exclude it, yeah, they could have taken out Zachrali Elokai Latova. They could have taken out, I'm better than all the pachas who preceded me. You know? Right. No, not taking him out. No. We want him in here. Okay. So I gave you a brief outline of the chapter in number 10. Three attempts on the life of Nehemiah, followed by, of course, Nehemiah's prayer, and then, as we'll see, a letter-writing campaign. Okay. The first attempt on his life. Chapter 6, sentences 1 to 4. You're now on page 1849 in the Stone Tanakh. Vayihi, we're now done with the whole poverty thing, and we're back to the wall is being built, and the enemies aren't happy. Vayika asher nishma l'sanvalat v'tovia ulegeshem ha'arvi uleyeser oyvenu kibanisi es hachoma v'lo nasar ba'paretz. It was heard by Sanballat, Tobia, Geshem, and the rest of our enemies that I had built the wall, and that there were no gaps in the wall anymore. We've made a lot of progress. The only thing that we're missing at this point were doors for the gates. That doesn't mean that you couldn't get in. This is the Jews getting together on a construction project. We just forgot the doors. No, what it means is the doors you would close in order to be able to make this a real defense against the enemy. Vayishlach Sanballat v'Geshem elai lemor. So Sanballat and Geshem sent me the following message. Lacha v'nivada yachdav bakfirim b'bikat ono. Let's get together, they say to him. Let's get together in the Kfirim. Kfirim is read as usually like Kfarim, villages. That's how Ibn Ezra reads it. Others say it's a place in particular, but in a place called Bik'at Ono. We're going to come back to Bik'at Ono. V'hema choshvim la'asos li ra'a. And they want to do bad things to me. So in other words, Nehemiah is writing this. He says, you think I didn't know what was going on? They said, let's get together. You think I don't know what that means? And I sent messengers to them, Lamor, saying, you know, there's a lot of work here. I can't go down. Why should the work stop if I let it go? And I go to you. Four times they tried to do this. And I gave them the same response. It's very interesting to see four times. It's always three. It's always three. No, here it was four. Apparently. Four times I said, I said no. Three, four times. They handed it to me four times. I said no. What bothers us here? What's strange? Well, they're persistent.
It's overt.
It's very, yeah, I mean, it seems fairly blunt as an instrument. Tovia disappeared. Right? You notice who sends the messages? Geshem and Sanballat. What happened to Tovia? Backed out? Got squeamish? The next part won't tell you. Nope. So that's one question. Another question, how did Nehemiah know this was an ambush? How does he know?
Because he knows them. He understands.
Because he knows them. Also, go back to Pasuk Aleph. There's one word that after what we read in the end of Perek Hay should really catch your ear. Sorry? Yeah. Right. He says, Banisi, they heard, ki Banisi es hachoma, they heard that I build the wall. Right? I had not yet put up the doors. It's all me. Why do that?
Again.
Is it, well, that's my question, is what's going on? So I think in terms of this, I think in terms of why the emphasis is on him, I think it's because they choose to put the emphasis on him. Meaning, this is now a personal attack. Previous attacks were on all the workers, on the nation, to discourage people, to physically harm them. This is not. This is them saying, let's cut him off. So they made him the focus.
What's their goal? Why don't they want the wall? Why don't they want him?
Because they don't want our ability to be independent. First of all, they go back to the previous generation where we refused to have them participate in building the Beis HaMikdash. But second, this area has now been assigned to the Jews, and the taxes and all that are going towards the Beis HaMikdash, towards the temple, right? They were very happy when they ran the area, and they took all the tax money. They didn't like this idea at all. And we did note that some of them may have been okay with it once they saw economic growth, when we talked about who assisted with the building. But generally speaking, they view this whole thing as an affront to them. they make Nehemiah now the target. And so Nehemiah's response to this response to their attempt is to Nehemiah's response to their attempt is to say, "Ha! They saw that I was building it, and therefore they attacked me personally." That's what I see here. Moish, you were going to say? Nope. Okay, sorry. The so that's what's that's what I think is going on here. And they say to him, "We want you to meet in Bikat Beit Ono." So the Dov Zakheim book, he says that this is an area in Nehemiah's jurisdiction, but with a non-Jewish population that would be suited to covering up the crime. He doesn't say what his source is for this idea, and he also writes that Ono isn't mentioned as a place anywhere else in Tanakh. So I don't know how he knows this about the choice of location, and Ono does show up in Divrei Hayamim in the eighth parak of Divrei Hayamim Aleph, so I don't even know what he means. But it's an interesting idea to explain that that's how they pick their place. Could be. The wall does not yet have doors. So Nehemiah could be just giving you a timeline about this. However,
it just be that they wanted to eliminate the leader who was energizing.
Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the fact that there's no doors, it's not the last part of it hasn't been finished. Let's get him now.
Right, and that's what Malbim says. Take a look at number one. He says, just like Janine said, "Shelachin hayalem od tikva levatel hamlacha." They still had some hope of halting the work. Because after that, once they saw it was complete, as we're going to see towards the end of the parak, at that point they fall in their own eyes, meaning they realize we're done. So they want to meet him, but Tovia isn't in it. So here I brought you source number 12. I brought you Zakheim's explanation for what happened to Tovia. Significantly, he writes, number 12, "Tovia did not join in the imitation to Nehemiah. He may have shrunk from the idea of murdering a fellow Jew." We noted when Tovia was introduced in Perek Bet that there's a debate as to his identity, but Zakheim believes that Tovia is in fact Jewish. Unclear to me why, but that's what he believes. He says maybe he got squeamish at this stage. Fighting them in a war, he can do. Assassinating an individual Jew, he has a hard time with.
It's a Hebrew name.
It could be a Hebrew name, certainly, yeah.
It is now.
No, but using the Yud Hey name of God sounds like it is. It does sound like it will be Jewish. He may also have been assigned to attack the city while Nehemiah was at Kfirim. He gives you an alternative explanation. Maybe he had a different job. Right? He's not at the meeting. In fact, they're going to attack while Nehemiah is out of town. Leaderless, the Jews might have been expected to panic, and heeding the likes of Tobiah's kinsman Eliashiv, who after all wielded considerable authority as high priest, to surrender without a fight. That would have been the plan, in which case you don't even need to assassinate Nehemiah. Right? You just need to get him out of town, attack while he's gone, and then you spare yourself the problem of having killed the king's cupbearer. So that may be. Honestly, though, I think there's a simpler explanation. The letter-writing campaign we're going to see at the end of this chapter is going to come from allies of Tovia trying to write letters to Nehemiah to say Tovia's a really good guy. It could be Tovia's trying to play both sides of the fence. On the one hand, he's an antagonist, ally of Sanballat, but on the other hand, he doesn't want to put himself on the line to the extent that Sanballat is willing to do so, and therefore he doesn't want to get involved in this in this attack. Even if you go back to chapter 3, sentence 35, which is where we saw him before, Tovia, it was top of page 1845, when they were doing their trash talk campaign against the Jews who were trying to build. So the first ones say, as is translated here, these poor Jews, right, the Jewish weaklings, what are they doing? Will they reinforce it? Will they bring offerings? Can they finish it? Can they restore the stones? And Tovia says, yeah, even if they build it, a fox could break their stone wall. It's not like such a strong statement. He's sort of, he's there, but he's not there. He's playing both sides.
Tovia.
So that was part of my problem with it. Theoretically, could be. Could be. But it's hard to say so.
They call him here Tovia the Ammonite.
Right, that was what Debbie also just said. So again, going back to when we introduced him in the second parak, Zakheim, and I don't think he's the only one, but I remember seeing it in him, was of the belief that Tovia is actually Jewish and that he's a servant of the Ammonite king. That was the way that he read it.
He goes even further. He says he's a kinsman of the
Eliash.
Well, that we'll see explicitly.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
That we will see explicitly. So again, I think he could be trying to play both sides of the fence. In terms of how Nehemiah knew what was going on, Rashi Mitzvot David says, "I figured it out." He does it himself. If this story had involved anybody else in Tanakh, it would have been, and God sent the Malach, and the Malach told him, "Beware, don't go to the meeting. They're here to attack you." But Nehemiah just, okay, I used my wits and understood that that I was in danger. Okay, that's the first attempt. Somewhat clumsy, doesn't work. Then there's the second attempt, which we'll start on. We're not going to finish it today, but at least we can start on it. The stories read fairly quickly. Perek Vav Pasuk Hei, chapter 6, sentence 5. We are on page 1849. Vayishlach Elai Sanballat Kadavar Zeh Pam Chamishis Ez Naro. Sanballat sent me this a fifth time with his youth. Ve'igeres Psucha Biado, but with an open letter in his hand. Kasubba, the following was recorded in this letter. Bagoyim nishma, it's been heard among the nations. Vigashmu omer, and Gashmu, who is Geshem Harvi, same person. He says also, Atava hayudim choshvim limrod, that you and the Jews are planning a rebellion against the Persians. Akena tabona choman, that's why you're building the wall. Ve'atahu velehem lemelech, and you are functioning as a king. Stuff like that. That's what people are saying, and that's what he wrote in the letter. Oh, you know what I also heard? That prophets, you have established prophets to declare in your name in Jerusalem that you are the king in Judea. Maybe not in your name, but to declare that you are the king in Judea. You know, word like this gets back to the king. This could be very bad for you. So let's plan together. That's what he says. So Nehemiah, well, I don't know if it's sneaky. It sounds like, I don't know if he's decided yet, but it could be sneaky or it could be blackmail. Right? It could work both ways. It could be that he's saying, this is a reason for you to come meet with me. Or he could be saying, you know, it wouldn't look good for you if the king were to hear this. If somebody were to send a letter to the Persians, you could be in trouble. Well, Pasuk Ches. V'eshlechai lav lemor. I sent a message to him saying, Lo niyak kadverim ha'ele. There never was such a thing. I don't know what you're talking about. Asher ata omer, this that you're saying. Ki b'libcha ata bodam. You're making it up yourself. Because all of them were intimidating us, saying, their hands will be weak from the work, it'll never happen. But now you suddenly want to strengthen my hand. In other words, I don't really think you have my best interests in mind here. Somehow, I don't think you've suddenly become concerned about my welfare and what might happen to me. So he rejects the offer of let's take counsel together. Okay. There are a few things here that are really interesting. What questions would you ask on these psukim? Oh, there's stuff here for sure.
Pretty detailed. It's pretty detailed. I mean, he could have just said, they tried to kill me several times.
Oh, well, I think he relishes this. Like, this is what makes a memoir fun to read. Otherwise, it's just all lists of names.
Yeah, like a suspense type.
Here, there's a story.
It doesn't sound very intelligent.
As a plot, you mean? I think it's great as a plot. What do you mean?
Well, you put yourself in that position. Something comes to you with what we call bogomizers. Stories and you say, don't be so silly, go away.
Well, that's why I think this is blackmail.
Yeah.
blackmail means?
Means if you don't meet with me, you know, the king might hear these things.
Oh, I have that. I've spun a tale out of whole cloth that I'm going to tell the king. And I can make it sound like it's true if you don't do what I want.
I have to tell you, not only do I think it's blackmail, but as we'll see, we're not going to do it this time, I think they succeeded.
So they have some things that they've manufactured that could be deemed proofs.
I think they did.
They
I think they did end up sending it to the king, and I think Nehemiah ended up paying a price for it.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a layer to what's going on here. I think that actually they succeeded. You'll see. That we're not going to get to this time. But why does he send an open letter? Why the emphasis on the open letter?
Not sealed.
And therefore what? Sorry, Karen? Everybody can read it. Everybody can read a letter with these allegations. Right? It's clever. The sending it in an open letter. It also may be read as an insult that he sends the letter open. We're going to come back to that next time. But there's an element of insult that you send your diplomatic letter to him and you don't even bother to seal it. It's also struck me as odd to see Nevi'im.
How do you set up prophets? I mean, you can't go out and buy for prophets instead of.
Oh, of course you can.
You mean like all of the false prophets in Jerusalem?
That's exactly what I mean.
All the crazy...
No, but that's exactly what I mean. It's very interesting because we always take this, I take this certainly, as post-prophecy. Like, we know Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi are the last of the Nevi'im, and they're not going to make an appearance. They made an appearance in Ezra, but we're never going to see them in Nehemiah. This is the end of the era of prophecy, and we just move on. But this shows us that there's a period in which false prophecy still exists. There are still people circulating claiming to be prophets. They're just not recognized as such by Tanakh. But there are people going around saying this is the word of God. Unless there's a different way to read the word Navi, which we're going to have to see. There might be another meaning for the word Navi. But the way that it seems to be presented here in a simple read is that in fact these are people who are claiming to have the word of God and that that's what's going on in this period when prophecy ends. False prophecy or claims of prophecy are not done. Those continue. So, God willing, next time we will have to pick up with the exciting rest of the story of the attempts on Nehemiah's life. And then move on to the completion of the wall, and then we get a name list. Thank you very much. A name list.